"If you really love me," she had said, "you will do this." That was what he had told Gratch. In a flash of understanding, it all came to him. The joy of comprehension took his breath. Kaylin had not been sending him away. She had been saving his life. She had done for him what he had just done for Gratch. The pain of having doubted her took him to his knees. It must have broken her heart. How could he have doubted her? The collar. He had been so afraid of the collar, he had been blinded to it. She loved him. She didn't want to be set free. She wanted only to save his life. She loved him. He threw his arms open and turned his face up to the sky. "She loves me!" He knelt, staring at the lock of hair she had given him to remind him of her love. In his whole life, he had never felt a sense of relief this great. The world came back to life for him. Richard's mind swirled in a confusion of conflicting emotions. He felt heartsick that he had sent Gratch away, that Gratch thought Richard didn't want him around anymore, but at the same time he felt overwhelming joy that Kaylin loved him. In the end, joy won out. He decided that someday Gratch might come to understand, as he had, that it had been necessary. Someday he would have the collar off and he would find Gratch and make it up to him. And even if he didn't, the Gar was better off living as a Gar should, hunting and searching out its own kind. It would come to have its own happiness, as had Richard. Although he wanted more than anything to throw his arms around Kaylin, hug her tight, and tell her how much he loved her, he couldn't. He was still a prisoner of the sisters, but he would study and learn and get the collar off. He would get the collar off and return to Kaylin. He knew without a doubt that she would be waiting for him. She had said she would always love him. When he met the search party of sisters at the edge of Tanamura, he told them that they needn't bother, that they would find the beast gone. They didn't believe him and went on into the hills. Richard didn't care. Gratch was gone. His friend was safe. Richard bought a gold necklace from a street hawker. He didn't know if it was real gold, but he didn't care. It looked pretty. He trotted the rest of the way to the palace. Pasha was pacing up and down in the hall outside his room.
"Richard! Richard, I was so worried. I know that right now you're furious with me, but in time you will see that..."
He grinned. "I'm not angry, Pasha. In fact, I brought you a present to thank you." She smiled in coy surprise as he offered her the necklace.
"For me? Why?"
"Because of you, I figured out that she loves me, and always has. I was just being a blind fool. You helped me see that." She regarded him with a frosty look.
"But you are here now, Richard. You will forget her in time. You'll see that I'm the one for you."
He smiled happily at her. "Pasha, I'm sorry. It's nothing against you. You're a beautiful young woman. In time, you'll find the one for you. You can have your pick of nearly any man. Everyone likes you. But I'm not the one for you. Maybe if I live to be 100, but short of that..." Her sly smile returned.
"Then I will wait."
He kissed the top of her head before going through the door. He didn't think he would be able to sleep while he was this excited, but all the walking and running had left him exhausted. His last thoughts before he drifted off were of Kaylin. He pictured her in his mind, as if she was there with him. Her special smile, her deep green eyes, and her radiant long hair. He drifted into the best sleep he had had in months. In the days following, Richard felt as if his feet hardly touched the ground. Everyone was puzzled by his good mood. They frowned at him at first, but were eventually caught up in his cheer. Some of the sisters giggled when he told them they looked as beautiful as a sunny day. He urged the sisters who came to practice with him to try harder to help him reach his Han. He had them stay longer than usual. Sisters Tovi and Cecilia bubbled with enthusiasm. Marissa and Nikki bestowed small smiles of pleasure. Armina was cautiously pleased, and Liliana delighted. He wanted his collar off, and until he could do what they wanted, he knew it would stay on. Having not seen Warren in a while, he finally went down to the vaults to see how his search was coming. Sister Becky was off retching, and the other sister giggled when he winked at her. Warren was pleasantly surprised to see him and exhilarated about some of the things he had found. He could hardly wait to tell Richard. When the door to one of the back rooms had grated closed,
He started opening volumes on the table. What you told me has been a great help. Look here.
Warren pointed at words Richard couldn't understand.
Just like you told me, this says that the Stone of Tears being in this world in itself does not free the Keeper.
So what significance does it have?
Well, it's as if there are a number of locks on his prison door, and this turns the key in one, but it does not free him. There are a number of ways for it to help him, a number of objects of magic to help, but the Stone of Tears itself must be used by one from this world, one with the gift for both additive and subtractive magic, to free the Keeper. Those with only the gift for additive can cause harm, tear the veil more, but not free him with it.
I think, Warren said with a twinkle,
that we're safe with that black stone in this world as long as we're careful.
It's not black. I never told you it was black. I just described the shape and size.
Warren touched a finger to his lower lip. Not black. Then what color is it?
Amber.
Warren slapped his hands to his chest with a groan of relief. Thank the Creator!
He let out an uncharacteristic whoop.
Whoa, that's the best news I've heard all year! Amber means it was touched by a wizard's tears. That repulses the Keeper. It's like rotten, festering meat would be to us. His agents won't touch it!
Richard's grin widened. It had to be Zed who had done it. That was why he felt Zed's pull from the stone. This, on top of his discovery about Kaelin, was just too much. He couldn't keep the happiness to himself.
Warren, I have other good news. I'm in love. I'm going to be wed.
Warren gave another whoop, but then his smile wilted.
It's not Pasha, is it? If it is, that's all right. I will understand. You two will make a handsome...
Richard lightly touched Warren's shoulder.
No, it's not Pasha. I'll tell you about her some other time. She's the mother confessor. I didn't mean to interrupt you. What about the other things?
Well...
He pulled another book across the table.
There are precious few references to the round bone you spoke of, and the skrin. One of them is in a forked prophecy having to do with the winter solstice coming up in a couple of weeks. It's a complicated juncture of forks and crossovers. We've only recently learned that the prophecy about that woman and her people is the descendant of a true fork.
Whenever Warren went off on his talk of forks and junctures, Richard always started getting lost. About the only thing he understood was winter solstice.
What does the winter solstice have to do with anything?
Warren looked up.
Winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. Shortest day, longest night, see what I mean?
No. What does that have to do with the skrin?
The longest night of the year. Longest night, most darkness. You see, the Keeper has certain times when he can exert greater or lesser influence in this world. His is the world of darkness. And when we are in the period of the longest darkness, the veil is at its weakest. That's when he is able to do the most harm.
Then we're in danger in a few weeks, at winter solstice.
Warren's eyebrows lifted in delight.
Yes, but you've given me the information to solve an upcoming prophecy, along with what we now know to be the true fork involved along with it. You see, with this winter solstice, there is a prophecy about the danger to the world of the living. The Keeper has to have a number of elements in place for it to be a true fork, such as an open gateway, but he needs an agent in this world.
Warren leaned forward in delight.
And he, in turn, needs the skrin. If he has the skrin bone you told me of, he can invoke the Guardian and destroy it. If the Guardian is destroyed, the Keeper can come through the gateway.
Warren, that sounds pretty frightening to me.
Warren lifted his hand with a dismissive wave.
No, no. Many prophecies sound ominous, like this one, but the elements are rarely all in place, so they turn out to be false forks, as most do. The books are clogged with false forks, because...
Warren, get to the point.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, you told me that your friend has the bone that can invoke the skrin, and the Keeper would need an agent, but he doesn't have one. Without the skrin bone, and with the upcoming fork which we know must be passed correctly, and we think it will, this is just another false fork. So we're safe!
Richard felt a distant tingling of apprehension, but Warren's bubbly confidence overwhelmed it. He was caught up in Warren's enthusiasm. He gave the young man a clap on the back.
Good work, Warren. Now I can concentrate on learning to use my Han.
Warren beamed.
Thank you, Richard. I'm so glad you've been able to help me. I've made more progress than I ever thought I would before I met you.
Still grinning, Richard shook his head in wonder. Warren, I've never met anyone that was so smart, yet so young. Warren laughed as if that was the funniest thing he had ever heard. What's so funny?
It's a joke,
Warren said, wiping tears from his eyes. What joke? Warren's laughter slowed to a frowning chuckle.
About me being young. It was funny.
Richard held his polite smile. Warren, why is that funny? Warren's chuckle died down to a grin.
Because I'm 157 years old.
Richard's flesh prickled.
Now you're making a joke. That's a joke.
It is a joke, Warren, isn't it? Warren's good humor evaporated. He blinked.
Richard, you do know, don't you? They must have told you. I was sure they would have told you by now.
Richard's arm swept the books aside. He scooted his chair closer.
Told me what? Warren, don't you say something like that and then go silent on me. You're my friend. You tell me.
Warren cleared his throat and then wet his lips with his tongue. He leaned in a little.
Richard, I'm sorry. I thought you knew, or I would have told you myself a long time ago. I would have.
Told me what?
The magic. The magic of the Palace of the Prophets. It has additive and subtractive elements to it that are tied to the other worlds. That makes time move differently here.
Warren, Richard said hoarsely, do you mean it affects all of us? All those wearing the collar?
No. Everyone at the palace. The sisters, too. This place is spelled. As long as the sisters live at the palace, they age the same as we do. The spell makes us age more slowly, makes time seem different to us.
What do you mean, different?
The spell slows our aging process. For every year we age, those outside age between 10 and 15 years.